It is about 24 minutes after the hour. We know it's a Tuesday. David, do we know it's Tuesday?
We do.
We had doubts about Monday yesterday.
I looked at the calendar and it's Tuesday.
Well, it's got to be Tuesday because I'm looking at Dr. Don. Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don, a member of the board at Creation Moments, a biochemist, and can you have oodles or scads of experience? I think in pharmaceuticals, you were there for a number of years, and then you saw the light. A light went on, and you went into winemaking.
Well, there was a stopover at a nonprofit organization.
Oh, that's true.
Called Mercy Ships.
Well, that's based right there, isn't it? I've seen Mercy Ships with on the TV. They have a promotional campaign going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's they're a yes. neighbor of yours.
So yeah, okay. we worked with them for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So we've done a bunch of stuff, but now we're growing grapes and making wine and.
And use all that training in chemistry and biochemistry. You're putting that to good work now. And instead of making pills, cranking out Dr. Jones's, what do you call the old time, the bottles, the Dr. Hook's Intrepid Medicine show, whatever.
Little liver pills?
No. Okay.
Snake.
No.
That was Carter. That's Carter's.
Carter pills.
Carter's little liver pill. They still make those?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, I just remember those. I remember the advertising from years. I didn't know what a little liver was, but apparently it's a little pill. We were, Don and I and David get together on Tuesday, have been for, what, 8-9 years now, and talk largely about the biblical story of creation. And we attempt to look at science and see how that supports or refutes or modifies somehow what we find in the Bible. And so far we have found very few conflicts, and those conflicts that we did find can be amply explained when you understand the context. I'm thinking, for example, of the genealogy in Genesis, where the names, much to my chagrin, had specific meanings. I never was aware of that. That just the genealogy itself tells an amazing story. There are all kinds of backstories going on in Genesis that the average reader, a typical Western reader, would not be aware of. And you brought those to light. You've also managed to inform us on things like vaccines and COVID. We've learned a whole lot from you. And now we're kind of developing a series on green energy. We've talked about this, and there are political ramifications to this, too. But we asked last week, or I asked you last week, what about nuclear power? Where is it? Are we shutting down nuclear plants here like they've done in Europe? Are we shutting down coal-fired plants like they've done in Europe, and standard electrical generating companies are going out of business? What's the status of nuclear power? Where are we?
Well, I have no idea where we are here in the United States, but there's an article on Rolls-Royce. Rolls-Royce is developing what they call SMR. That's the small modular reactor. And Rolls-Royce is obviously famous for the Rolls-Royce automobile, but they make all kinds of stuff, and they make the nuclear power plants that are in submarines, the nuclear-powered submarines. And so they've been in the business of doing power plants for some time. And what makes this different is that normally when you think of a nuclear power plant, you think of one that is made on site. That is, you bring in all the concrete and, you got to dig holes and all this other stuff, and you build it on site. Well, their plan is they go back to Henry Ford's idea of the assembly line. And so they build all the components at a plant that that they have. And then they bring, they truck or ship the components to the site, and then construct the plant there. And it's a smaller plant, but it generates a significantly more amount of energy than your typical power plant has in the past. So, for example, since Rolls-Royce is based in Britain, and the British government is now looking at least purchasing one, if not multiple, of these.
Well, they're in energy crisis over there. This makes sense for them. I mean, that's why it issues from Great Britain, I think. They've got to have a keen interest in this.
Well, they do have a keen interest, and I think it's going to solve a lot of the energy problems. I mean, you know, France has been in this business for a long time, and at least 70 to 80% of their power, I think at least 70% of their power is generated by nuclear energy. But England, not so much. And so this is a way where they can rapidly boost their energy production and start building these things. They're estimated that the British government by 2024 will give regulatory approval to this type of plant, and actually have one built and put into the grid by 2029. So it still takes a while to put these things together and to build them. But they're hoping by 2029 that they could have this online, which is really, in the energy industry, is not all that long. Usually it takes a long time to, you know, build a coal fired plant or something else. But this energy plant, they would probably start with one. And then I think they're talking about possibly adding one per year into the system, so that they could be, at least from electricity point of view, could be completely independent from such countries as Russia or others that produce other forms of energy or fossil fuel type of energies like coal or oil, for example. And so this would be a great benefit for them, and I would think it'd be a great benefit, you know, for us. So we ask, okay, what's so different about this plant as opposed to other nuclear power plants? One, they're calling this the Generation 3 Plus. So we have power plants that are Generation 2. For example, and this is obviously one step above that, and it's a little bit more, but it's still the fission type of plant. That's not fishing, but fission. That is, you take uranium, it's still based on uranium-238, which is a radioactive uranium, and you split that, and then you get the energy from the splitting of the atom. The first atomic bomb was a uranium-238 bomb, and therefore was a pretty dirty bomb. And then, you know, we have since learned how to make hydrogen bombs, and hydrogen bombs are fusion bombs. That is, you take hydrogen and you fuse it together, and you get higher atoms, atomic weight, atoms out of the fusion. And fusion actually produces a lot more energy than fission reaction. But this is the old fission reaction. We haven't gotten the fusion yet, because it takes a lot more energy to start the reaction. And then they're still, I think, figuring out how to keep the reaction going. But fission reaction's been around a long time. This technology is now pretty safe. This particular technology is what's called a pressure water reactor. So it's a modular pressure water reactor That is, it's a two-stage system where you take highly purified deionized water, and that is actually pressurized, so it goes into the nuclear reactor itself.
Is that the same thing as heavy water, which was a big story in World War II, as they were developing atomic bombs, and I know they were producing it in Norway. Is that what heavy water is?
No, heavy water is tritium.
Oh, okay.
And this is just regular water, or lighter water.
Okay.
You know, so the hydrogen in the heavy water is tritium, as opposed to deuterium or just hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
So they purify the water. Why do they purify the water? Because they don't want any radioactive material leaking out of the reactor. So they have this one jacketed system of highly pressurized water, about 150 bars, that goes into the reactor. Now, why do they pressurize it? Because when the reactor is extremely hot, and so if you put water in a system like that without the pressure, it would just flash boil instantly. So you need the pressure, and then they run the water through the system at extremely high flow rates, like 100,000 gallons per minute or something like that. So it's a technically sophisticated type of system that then that heated super heated water is then used with a heat exchanger to heat up the secondary water, which is not highly pressurized. And that produces steam, which then drives your turbines, electric turbines, which then you generate electricity from, and then that is recirculated in the process.
Now, talk about how does this compare then with the so-called green energy, wind turbines and solar? There's a concept in this article called power density. What does that mean?
That is related to basically how much land do you need supply or reserve for a particular energy form. So let's take wind energy, for example, and there's a chart in this particular article that we're discussing today. Wind, it takes about one to produce 1 watt of energy. It takes about one square. Well, let me see. It takes about one watt per square meter is the energy density for wind. Wind energy. And so that means you need a tremendous amount of land in order to power let's say the United States. You would need basically the amount of land which is to the size of California doubled and just covered with windmills. Now there are communities and counties that are revolting against putting all kinds of windmills all over their county and disturbing the serenity of the property, and I don't blame them, because we had when we were earlier this year, we went to a grape growing conference out in West Texas in Brownfield. And there's windmills all over the place, and they're just not pretty. I mean, it's okay, it's interesting once you see them, but to go on for miles and miles and miles seeing these windmills is a kind of a little bit disturbing. And even when we were driving out there and driving back, there were trucks bringing blades, I mean, long trucks with these blades for these windmills that were headed out in that direction. So it's a source of energy, but it takes a quite a bit of land in order to do that.
And it's not reliable.
The wind stops blowing, you stop generating energy.
Exactly. They learned that in Texas the hard way the winter before last. Now, by the way, this article is linked in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com if you'd like to follow along with us and maybe take a look at that chart. But this makes the point that this Rolls-Royce nuclear power plant needs 10,000 times less land than wind energy does. 10,000, that means 1/10,000th of the land area would produce a comparable power to 10,000 times that much in wind energy. And the same applies to solar, which takes millions of acres of land to produce the power density. And they define power density as the ability to do work, that is, to accomplish stuff with the electricity that's generated. So it looks like this is a tremendous advantage over so-called green energy sources, but then politics enters into it. Maybe more people should go see all those windmills in Texas and go, EU, why?
Yeah, well, right. And they're out in California, too. But, you know, California's got environmental restrictions and various other areas are, like I said, objecting to this. Even solar power, you know, we say, well, okay, why don't we just put solar cells all over the place? Obviously, there's a great disadvantage of solar power from the one point in that you only get electricity when the sun shines. And then if it's a cloudy day, you know, it's not that efficient. And then, of course, at night, you're not generating electricity, so you need massive batteries in order to store the energy. Plus, it's while it is 10 times denser in energy power density than wind, you still need a lot of land. That doesn't solve your problem. It's interesting that our current nuclear power plants are about 2,000 times more power density than wind, for example. But this new power plant is going to be, as you said, 10,000 times more. So, for example, the first power plant that they're considering building is a 470 megawatt power plant that is only going to take 10 acres. You know, which is okay. That's still 10 acres is 10 acres, but it's not. You could put those. For example, England it doesn't have a whole lot of land to commit to wind or to solar, so this meets their needs tremendously. In that, 10 acres, we can certainly find 10 acres over here or 10 acres over there to put one of these power plants. And so they would benefit greatly from this, and I think we would too. I mean, this whole concept that we think that nuclear power generators are there's a whole safety concern, and what happens if these things have a meltdown? Well, and it's been this way for some time. These new nuclear power plants. Their control rods, for example, automatically get reinserted if the temperature drops or something happens in the system to say, hey, the system isn't working right. The control rods are kind of held up with springs, and they automatically get inserted back into the reactor, which shuts the reactor down. So they're a whole lot safer than they used to be, even the current nuclear power plants that we have here in the United States. And I think this is certainly a much more viable alternative than either solar or wind generation, and we should be looking at this as well in this country. Now, the interesting thing about all of this is that all of this energy, clean energy push comes from this environmental scare of, oh my goodness, we're producing too much you know, carbon dioxide and methane and all of these greenhouse gases, and that's causing the earth to warm. Well, we've talked about that before. It's not causing the earth to warm at all. It's the sun that's causing the earth to go through cycles of heating and cooling, which it's been doing for thousands of years. And so the basic argument or premise for pushing for any alternative right now is that of the environmental concerns. And if you're truly interested in the environment, you would go nuclear, because the wind and the solar, for example, solar panels, you know, with the elements in the that it takes to create these solar panels, and certainly all of the rare earth minerals that are needed for batteries and everything, is much more destructive to the environment and to the earth than, you know, digging up a little uranium, refining it, and putting it in these power plants. So this is the way to go if you're really concerned about the environment and the greenhouse gases. But even with this nuclear power, you still, or any type of power alternative to fossil fuels, for example, you're still left with the problem of transitioning from fossil fuels to some alternative energy. And that transition, for example, okay, we talked about this first power plant being possibly up and running by 2029. And let's say you do have, okay, now we've got almost an unlimited supply of electricity, so now we can power these electric cars and things, but as I said, generating the batteries or constructing the batteries for these electric cars is extremely environmental toxic, if you will, and that's why the United States will not allow the mining of these rare earths that go into the batteries.
You know, another thing about this green energy thing is we seem to think in a static way. Okay, we have all these clean energy sources. They're spinning in the air, and they're absorbing sunlight and passing on all this wonderful electricity. What we don't seem to take into consideration is what it takes to create those things. There's an element in this article that talks about two-thirds of America's total energy footprint is devoted to growing corn for ethanol. Now, you think about ethanol, and it goes in the gas, and but think about what it takes to produce all that corn. The land, the fertilizer, diesel fuel for equipment to maintain the fields. There's a lot more that goes into the production of energy producing hardware than we see than the green energy people seem to realize. I mean, that's what does that alone do to the environment?
Well, I mean, obviously you got fields in central United States. You go up to Illinois, there's nothing but cornfields all over the place, and it's because of the corn ethanol that's being produced, and its energy density is 0.1. So it's 10 times less efficient than wind power. In terms of energy, and while you know people aren't going to complain necessarily about cornfields, but we're using that land to produce corn when it could be producing other crops that could be more important. That was a governmental issue, problem that they generated themselves, which doesn't make any sense, never made any sense in the amount of energy it takes to put in, as you said, to generate the corn in the first place, and then you got to convert the corn to ethanol. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
It just seems like sometimes it takes more energy to produce the energy than you get from the energy producers. I mean, it's not efficient.
Yes, it does. Yes.
Yeah, yes, not to mention all the fertilizer that you need to put, throw on the fields, which is then killing the ground that the that the corn is being grown on. So there's all kinds of major issues with that. It seems like whenever the government steps in and says, okay, we're going to subsidize this, we're going to push this in a way that, here's an idea, we'll produce ethanol, and so we're going to subsidize all of these farmers if they'll grow corn for ethanol production.
And by golly, we'll get the farm vote.
We'll get the farm vote, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
David, you had
anyway.
David,
yeah, yeah. We went to a little 1 hour seminar yesterday on the Minnesota project and the Minnesota efforts, along with clean energy and wind and solar and where it's going and what it's doing. One of the things that came out of it, many things came out of it, but one of the things that was most interesting is that one of the major utilities in the cities, in the big Twin Cities area, and I've forgotten the name of it now, but all power generators have this, or energy producers have this, because it's a state law, but it's relying on they're rewarded for putting in they're rewarded for putting in any power source, and the cheapest one right now to put in is solar and wind. So they're generating an income for their shareholders by putting in wind energy and solar energy fields. I mean, acres and acres and acres, and their solar energy is producing 1% of the energy in this state in Minnesota. Wind energy is something like 5 or 6%. I mean, it's an incredible waste of money.
It is.
We had two nuclear plants. The one nuclear plant near Monticello was decommissioned 2 or 3 years ago, and now it's just a big empty building. There's one other nuclear plant, Prairie Island, and people are already starting to talk about decommissioning it. And they're tearing down coal plants as well. I mean, our power generators are trying to do now is to expand the grid, to hook up with other states farther away: North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Iowa, and so that they're part of a larger grid. Now, Minnesota was a part of the same grid weren't really part of it, but were kind of like associated with, and they would have been able to take when Texas had their problem a couple of years ago. And it was possible that we might have been required to ship energy down to Texas to take pick up some of the slack there. But I mean, I'm not sure exactly what happened, but at the last minute, we were not required to do that. And now we're going to be experiencing rolling brownouts and rolling blackouts in a matter of years. We had one last year, in that particular case, what happened was the power grid was overloaded and had to shut down, and it was during the middle of the summer. I can't tell you where I heard that and the information that I got it from, because the person that told me lives close in the house, and if she hears me telling that story out of school, I'll be beaten soundly about the head and shoulders.
Yeah.
And that's information that's not released to the public.
Well, what happened in Texas a couple of years ago it was an extended cold snap in February. It was like 2 weeks of sub-zero temperatures even, and even colder wind chills. And it was like a decade or more ago that federal money had come into Texas designated for winterizing standard energy producing plants, gas and fuel oil but the smart people in Texas said, hey, here's a chance to convert to green energy. So instead, they diverted the money to building windmills and putting in solar, which didn't work when it got cold. And so the
windmills don't move.
The plants that should have been winterized never were.
They didn't winterize the you know, the fossil fuel plants that they were supposed to. So those plants went down too. When government gets involved, I mean, it is like, okay, let's just do the right thing and not incentivize
One of the things in the article that I found most encouraging is Roger Pilkey, who was a University of Colorado professor, said that, or he put together the Iron Law of Climate. And he says when decision makers or politicians have to decide between economic growth and climate action, they'll pick economic growth every time. I want to know how long do they have to wait before they start picking economic growth, because they're not doing it now. Now they're going backwards. It's going, they're going backwards. It's an old technology that it was in use in our energy producing years decades ago, hundreds of centuries ago. I mean, we've gone past using solar power and wind power for anything, except maybe drawing a little water in the farm. But it just doesn't. It's not a good solution.
And it's an interesting topic and an article well worth taking a look at. Again, the link to the article, you could find it on the Cornwall Alliance website, but you can link to it quickly at brokenroadradio.com. I want to mention, too, that Creation Moments has a website that gives you scientific information about the biblical story of creation. Creationmoments.com is their website. Don is a member of the board there. And we urge you to pay a visit to that website and see what's there. You can what it does is it helps you define or defend that biblical story of creation. It gives you good scientific information that you can then relay to other people that say, aha, that's not science there. What is that stuff in Genesis? You can explain it when you get that information under your belt. Don Clark, thank you very much for the time you spent with us today. You invested with us today. And three cheers for nuclear energy. I'd love to see that be picked up in the news in advance. They need a good public relations team, I think. All those nuclear.
Well, it would. I think it would do us well to start building nuclear power plants, such as these SMRs that they're contemplating doing in England. It still doesn't solve all the problems, especially with transportation, because batteries is not going to be the answer, at least not in our lifetime.
That's becoming rapidly apparent, I think, here. Don, have a terrific week. We'll see you next Tuesday or thereabouts. And again, appreciate the time. Blessings to you and the family and to Valle della Pace. By the way, there's a link to Don.
Blessings to y'all, too.
Don's Grape Ranch on Broken Road Radio. Take care. Bye-bye.
See you, Don.
Bye-bye.